Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 94 event, which takes place in Hidalgo, Texas. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 0-2 on our premium bets for UFC 203 to lose 5 units overall. We lost our plays on Joanne Calderwood and Jason Rodriguez. We did win our 1-unit free bet, however, on Mickey Gall by submission prop. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 94 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Alejandro Perez, who is 18-6, and Albert Morales, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Quick little disclaimer here. I'm a bit under the weather, but I'll make it through. So I apologize in advance if I sound a little funky here. But getting into the matchup, I open Morales -150. The comeback on Perez was at +110. Currently over at fivedimes.eu, it is currently -115 for Perez. Morales is -105. So more action has come in on the UFC veteran at this point, Perez. And I understand it. I mean, Perez is definitely a tough fighter. He's obviously the Ultimate Fighter Latin America champion, which it is what it is. I mean, it's definitely not ever an easy obstacle to accomplish winning the tournament. It doesn't matter how stacked the competition is or whatnot. So Perez, in my opinion, training with AKA has improved his game significantly. I mean, he's getting better on the feet. His wrestling is getting better. His submission game overall, I mean, he's a very complete fighter. So he's a tough out. I mean, if you look at his recent wins, I mean, Entwistle, not a bad win at all for him. Entwistle is a very dangerous ground guy. He was able to get rid of him in the first round. Same thing with Jorgensen. I know there was an injury there with Jorgensen, but that's a solid win. And Perez looked good in both of those fights for sure. So Perez is an up-and-coming talent. He's still fairly young at age 27, and he's a tough out to make your UFC debut, but I think Morales is game. I mean, that's exactly why I opened him a favorite, to be honest with you, because I think the guy's up for the challenge. He is making this debut on short notice. He's in for Gamburian here, but he has had some experience. I mean, and the short notice isn't that awful. It's not like he's taking it on a week's notice or something. I think he's going to have enough time to prepare and work out, and he seems to always be in training and in decent shape. So I don't think the short notice is going to be a huge impact for him. He is a Bellator World Series of Fighting and RFA veteran, so he's actually competed in some decent organizations outside of the UFC, and I think he is ready and he belongs, you know, to come into this bantamweight division and make some noise here. So he's confident, he's cocky, but he seems to back it up so far. Overall, I think he's a promising young prospect. He's 25 years old, so he's got a lot of room to improve. He's got a well-rounded skill set. He's more known for his BJJ and ground skill, but to be honest with you, his stand-up game is very effective as well. He's aggressive. He pushes the pace in all areas, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. I mean, the guy really goes for it. He does damage if he's on top from the mount position or ground and pound. If he's in half guard, whatever the case may be, if he's in top position on the ground, the guy can drop some bombs. And he's got that killer instinct that you like to see and like to finish fights. So overall, I mean, he's a tough out for Perez, though, too, I think. So he's going to be a little bit physically bigger. He's going to have a little bit more reach than Perez. He's going to be a little bit taller as well. And I think how they match up, it'll be back and forth. It'll be a little bit competitive, but I just think Morales is going to be a little bit too much. The pressure is going to be too much for Perez. I can see Morales knocking him out on the feet, to be honest with you. I can see Morales possibly subbing him on the ground as well. And if it hits the scorecards, I bet it's going to be very competitive, but I do think Morales is going to probably get the nod on the cards as well. So I think the hype is real around Morales. I think his confidence and his semi-arrogance going into this fight, because he was actually calling for a top 10 guy in a bantamweight division. So let's take it one step at a time here. And I think Perez is actually a great step forward for him. And if he gets by Perez, then we can really see what he's made of. So I'm going to pick Morales to win this fight. I think he's a legit prospect, and I think we're going to see some good things for him in the future as well. So Morales is my pick.
And some people might think that, you know, Morales is too early in his career to be getting an opportunity like this, but I mean, because he's only 6-0 as a professional. But if you look at those six wins, two were in Bellator, one was in World Series of Fighting, and his most recent was in RFA, where he took on a pretty decent guy in Mario Israel and just completely destroyed him. I mean, Israel was 10-1, and he takes him out in 20 seconds. So Morales is no joke. Like, he is an extremely talented and powerful and dangerous bantamweight fighter. And he's got good size. He should have a bit of an advantage in reach and height against Perez. I think he has the power edge. In terms of submission ability, his submission game is actually pretty strong. He's picked up three submissions. Two were from his back, so he's dangerous even if you take him down. But on the feet, he also is just ferocious. I mean, the one thing I would say that would be a negative for him is the fact that sometimes he's over-aggressive on the feet, and that if somebody is a very talented counter-striker with good movement, then they can definitely take advantage of that. They could be able to just move to the side as he kind of charges forward and land swift counters. And I don't know if Perez is good enough to do that. He potentially is, but he's definitely going to have to be on his game in this fight if he wants to pull something like that off, because we've seen the best and worst of Alejandro Perez so far in his UFC career. I mean, the best of him have been his last two fights, where he just repeatedly got the better of his opponents. So Scott Jorgensen, I mean, he just went off with great leg kicks against Jorgensen and then just continued attacking low instead of aggressively or over-aggressively charging in, and then was able to take him out in the second round. Ian Entwistle, he showcased kind of his grappling knowledge in that fight by surviving all the leg hook and heel hook attempts, and was able to turn the tides on Entwistle, and then eventually he just battered him and got a TKO stoppage. Now the worst was Patrick Williams. Williams landed like two strikes, dropped him, and then submitted him with a guillotine choke. So, and that was definitely a terrible, terrible performance for Perez. That's the thing he needs to look out for the most, because Morales is definitely capable of taking him out immediately if Perez leaves his chin exposed for even a moment. And that's the thing that I'm worried about the most, because we saw him get rocked and hurt and finished really quickly before, and Morales is definitely the type of guy that is capable of doing that. So I actually think normally in a case like this, where a guy's making his UFC debut on relatively short notice, I mean, he is getting a month, but relatively short notice against a seasoned veteran, a guy that's won the Ultimate Fighter, I would normally pick Perez 100% of the time, but I think Morales might actually be dangerous enough to pull this off. So I'm going to side with Albert Morales here. I think that his power and submission ability might be able to overcome Perez's experience. So my pick is Morales. Now moving on to the headlining bout of the Fight Pass prelims, we have Eric Montano, who is 8-3, taking on Randy Brown, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Brown -350 to come back on Montano at +250. Right now, it's Brown -400 to come back on Montano. It's +325. So needless to say, Montano has been faded, and people are all over Brown for this fight. And another spot where I can understand it. I mean, Montano, it's definitely not a slouch, but the way he matches up with Randy Brown, it's just technically a bad matchup for him. I mean, Montano is a type of fighter that obviously he had some success on the Ultimate Fighter as well. I mean, he was able to win that season of the Ultimate Fighter by split decision in a very competitive fight with Marin. We should mention that, but Brown is a big step up. I mean, Brown is, of course, he's had a lot of hype behind him as well, looking for a fighter, the Dana White show, all that stuff around him. And so far he's had a couple decent performances. I know he's coming off a loss in his last fight to Graves, but Mike Graves, man, I mean, you can't compare Graves to Montano. So I think that was too big of a step up in competition for Brown at that point. I mean, Graves' ground game is legit. It's better than Montano's. His wrestling is as well. So, and Brown early on, especially round one, wasn't doing bad in that fight. It's just that Graves finally, you know, in round two, got him to the ground, was able to get the choke there. But overall, Montano has a lot of the same capabilities. I mean, as far as he's a well-rounded fighter, he's not bad on the feet. He's got a good ground game. He's just, I think, not special in any area particularly. I mean, he's okay in those areas. And where I think Brown is going to have a huge advantage is really on the feet. He's going to be able to sprawl and brawl because Montano's wrestling is really not that great. So I think he's going to struggle taking Brown to the floor. And if that happens, again, with his length, Brown is going to have a significant reach advantage in this spot. And his takedown defense is good enough that I really believe that Brown's going to be able to keep this fight upright, land some knees, land some kicks, land some punches, and probably pick Montano apart. And ultimately, I think he probably has a good shot at finishing him. If not, then obviously he's going to probably win on points. But Brown has to be careful because if this fight does get to the floor and Montano takes his back, that is a way he can win. So I think the line is getting a little bit out of hand, to be honest with you. I do, again, have confidence in Brown winning this fight because stylistically it's a bad matchup. I just don't see any area other than the ground where Montano is going to have a significant edge over Brown, but I think he's going to struggle getting it there. So for Brown, it should be his fight to win or lose. That's why he's such a sizable favorite in this spot, and I think he is going to come through with a win. I just caution everybody, I mean, at this point where it's minus 400, I don't think there's any value. As far as parlays go, obviously, or straight bets. I mean, if there's value, period, and I just don't see it at this point. So it's been bet up enough to the point where it's like a stay away from fight, in my opinion. But for a pick, you got to go with Brown.
Randy Brown, yeah, he didn't look so great in the last fight against Graves, but that's a completely different type of wrestler, a tenacious wrestler that just would not stop going for the takedown, and eventually he got Brown down. And once he did, he wore him out on the ground and ended up picking up a submission. Now, I do not see Montano as that type of wrestler. Montano has a decent submission game. He's capable of takedowns, but they usually kind of come in the flow of striking, or maybe he catches an opponent completely off guard. And he's not going to catch Randy Brown off guard, in my opinion. Brown should be able to keep his distance extremely well in this fight. It's going to make the takedown very difficult for Montano. I do think Montano might have a power edge in terms of just one punch ability, but again, I think it's going to be difficult for Brown or for Montano to use that power to get inside because Randy Brown has a 5-inch reach advantage. He's 3 inches taller. His legs are 3 inches longer. He's basically one of the tallest and longest fighters in the welterweight division outside of somebody like Neil Magny or the guy that he faced in his UFC debut, who's no longer in the UFC. Matt Dwyer, but Randy Brown definitely is a solid technical striker. Even if he does get taken down, he's not terrible off of his back. He's actually kind of crafty. I could see him even potentially submitting Montano off his back if Montano's sloppy, if he does get a takedown. But that being said, I expect this fight to take place on the feet, and I think Randy Brown is just going to kind of pick apart Montano over the course of a round or two. Maybe all three rounds to win a decision, but I could see Brown doing enough damage on the feet from distance, landing some good straight punches, and eventually picking up a TKO victory. But overall, I agree that the line has gotten out of control, but it still is Randy Brown's fight to lose, so I'm going to pick him. Now moving on to the first fight of the Fox Sports 1 prelims. We have a bantamweight contest between Jose Quinones, who is 5-2, and Joey Gomez, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Gomez minus 170, the comeback on Quinones at plus 130. Right now it's Gomez minus 160, Quinones is plus 140, so line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there has been some two-way action coming in on this fight early on. Because you know what, Quinones definitely deserves some respect. I mean, again, he was an Ultimate Fighter finalist. He actually had a good run on that show. He lost to Perez, which we were just discussing earlier in this podcast, in a pretty competitive fight. But it was unfortunate for him to lose that spot because he was favored going into that fight, and it was a winnable fight for him. So there's definitely some question marks regarding Quinones' defense, I think. I mean, he's a little bit too hittable for my liking. He does have some fight IQ problems at times as well. But he's getting better, and you could definitely see the progress. And again, I think a lot of times some of these fighters that come off the Ultimate Fighter show, that's like boot camp, man. I mean, to go through the season of Ultimate Fighter, it definitely makes you a better mixed martial artist. You just kind of learn how to train, how the professionals are doing things. So if you're kind of trying to make it and find your way into the UFC, that is, I mean, it's a tough avenue to go through, but realistically, if you can make it in through the Ultimate Fighter, I think it elevates your game to a whole nother level. So we're seeing a lot of these Ultimate Fighter competitors kind of do that after they leave, you know, the house or whatever, and they start making their UFC debuts. It seems like they're getting better and better. And Quinones is another one of those guys that I think falls in line like that. So the guy is pretty dangerous. I mean, he's got some okay stand up. He's long for the weight class typically. I mean, he's got a little bit of length for with the bantamweight division. He's got a little bit of power in the feet. He's got some decent wrestling and takedown ability, and he's got okay subs. So the guy is well rounded, but again, another one of those spots where he doesn't necessarily excel in one particular area, you know, over the other. I think he's kind of well balanced, well rounded, but he's not dominant in anything. So he's going to struggle on the feet, I think, here against Gomez. Gomez is basically your average, well, not, I shouldn't say average, but your typical striker that is above average in that area. Obviously, he's got some power. He's got some speed. He's got some nice versatility on the feet. His debut fight, unfortunately for him, didn't go so well against Font because he suffered a knockout, his first loss of his career, his professional career in that spot, but he took that fight on short notice. Font has a ton of power. And I mean, that, stylistically, that was a pretty good matchup. Either way, I mean, striker versus striker type of matchup. So this is not that type of matchup. I mean, on the feet, Gomez is going to have a significant advantage. Quinones is going to want to get this fight to the floor and try to work his ground game. Gomez, again, has decent takedown defense, has decent ground awareness, but if there is any advantage in this fight that Quinones has, it's on the ground. So I think what we're going to see here is going to be an interesting fight. He'll probably go back and forth a little bit. I mean, even Quinones will stand and land some shots. He'll get his on the feet as well. I just think Gomez is just going to be a little bit better on the feet. He's going to be able to probably maintain it upright as well. And if he does, I expect him to possibly knock Quinones out, or again, maybe hit the scorecards and win a pretty competitive decision. So I do like Gomez in this spot. He's going to be a little bit longer. He's going to be the better striker. He should be able to keep it upright. So I'm going to pick him to win.
Yeah, Jose Quinones, he's a bit of a mystery man. He's capable of some good performances. He looked pretty good on Tough Latin America until the finale, where he was just landing a bunch of illegal blows, had a point taken away, ended up losing to Alejandro Perez, and then bounced immediately back by just decimating Morales and picking up a first round submission victory. So he's capable of excellent performances. He's just very inconsistent. Now, Joey Gomez, as Nick mentioned, UFC debut didn't grow so great, but I thought he showcased some flashes of brilliance in that fight. I mean, his boxing was on point. He was fending Rob Font off early. I think he just kind of ran out of steam a little bit. I mean, he took that fight on super short notice to make his UFC debut. And once he started to slow down, Rob Font just connected with some big shots and was able to take him out. I think now that he's going to have a full training camp behind him, this is kind of his real UFC debut. We're going to really see what he's capable of. And I think that he's going to look really, really good. His boxing should be significantly better than Quinones. I think he should be winning on the feet almost consistently the entire fight, as long as it's taking place on the feet. If Quinones has a chance, for me, I think he's going to have to get this fight to the floor. Even though his ground game isn't, you know, unbelievable, it might be good enough to potentially ride out a round over Gomez, maybe even go for a submission. I don't know how great Gomez is on the ground, because we really haven't seen a lot of it yet. But for the most part, as long as this fight stays standing, it's Gomez's fight to lose. And I think that he has a little bit of wrestling. It's just more he wants to keep the fight standing. And if he can use that wrestling in reverse, then he's going to be in good shape. So I'm going to side with Joey Gomez here. I think that he'll either win a decision on the feet or potentially get a stoppage victory. So my pick is Joey Gomez. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Antonio Carlos Jr., who is 6-2 with one no contest, taking on Leonardo Augusto Laleco, who is 11-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Carlos Jr., minus 245, the comeback on Laleco at plus 175. Checking five dimes right now. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. It's minus 225 for Carlos Jr. The comeback on Laleco is that same plus 175. So a lot of people are kind of avoiding this fight. It is kind of tough, man. I mean, Carlos Jr. was, again, an Ultimate Fighter winner. A lot of hype behind him. A lot of high expectations. He made the weight cut down to 185 pounds. He looked good doing so. I mean, physically, obviously, he's strong. for a grappling-based fighter, that's what he's known for. He's got outstanding jiu-jitsu on the ground. He actually doesn't have a bad stand-up game. I mean, he's progressing well in that area. But then, all of a sudden, reality strikes a little bit for Carlos Jr., and he loses to Daniel Kelly. Now, not trying to disrespect Daniel Kelly at all, because Daniel Kelly's probably a bit underrated. I mean, you can't deny the guy has gotten some wins in the UFC thus far, and he's an older guy. So, I mean, you got to give him credit where credit's due. He weathered a storm against Carlos Jr. and was able to finish him. But for Carlos Jr., that's a bad loss. I mean, if you're a serious prospect and future contender at 185, you don't lose that fight. So that opens up all of our eyes, and it's kind of a head scratcher, to be honest with you. I mean, as the fight progressed, Carlos Jr. looked terrible. Yeah, I mean, and that's what got him beat there. I mean, his gas tank, stamina issues, everything. He looked off. So maybe 185 pounds isn't the division for Carlos Jr. Well, that's yet to be determined. So we'll see here. He's going to have another big test on Laleko. Laleko's actually a pretty good fighter. I mean, he's not bad. Anthony Smith was doing really well, obviously, early on in that fight. He was hanging with him. It was a competitive fight. Laleko, though, hung in there, and he was able to make it interesting as the fight went. You know, he almost stole one actually in the third round of that fight. So Laleko's the type of fighter that he's a well-rounded fighter as well. I mean, on the feet, he has some power. He's definitely got some skill. I mean, he mixes up his technique well. He's a threat. On the ground, he's not bad either. He's never been submitted in his career. He's capable of getting the submission game. So he's not totally out of his element on the ground, but Carlos Jr. probably will be able to get this fight to the floor. And if he does, obviously the advantage is going to be Carlos Jr. But the way this fight kind of plays out, I think if Carlos Jr. cannot finish Laleko on the floor, as the fight progresses, I think Laleko has a good chance of probably doing what Daniel Kelly did and finishing Carlos Jr. like maybe in the late round two, early round three in this spot. Or if he could sprawl brawl and keep the fight upright, I think Laleko actually is going to have some success on the feet as well against Carlos Jr. and possibly finishing him earlier. So this is definitely, in my opinion, a dog or pass situation. I mean, there's no way after that last performance that I would lay over 2-1 on Carlos Jr. in this spot. And I would be tempted to take a shot at the dog, to be honest with you. I mean, it is one of those spots that you got to look at the dog a little bit closer and see if you find value there or not. So that's yet to be determined again, but we'll see how weigh-ins and everything plays out. But I do think it's a dog or pass situation. And I do think this is a good spot for Laleko to come in and maybe totally derail the hype train of Carlos Jr. I'm disappointed in a way in Carlos Jr. because I did think that this guy had a lot of promise, but with that setback, I'm not so sure anymore. So I'm going to pick Carlos Jr. to win because I do think he gets it to the ground. And if he does get it to the ground, he should have the advantage possibly getting the submission, but I'm not confident anymore. So my pick is Carlos Jr., but it is a dog or pass situation, definitely.
Yeah, Antonio Carlos Jr. has the complete package. He has power on the feet. He has takedown ability. He has a strong ground game. He has a pretty good chin. His problem is, for some reason, when things aren't going his way, he just kind of gives up a little bit. I mean, you saw it a little in the Patrick Cummins fight where he really didn't offer much other than repeated heel hooks against a strong wrestler that kept taking him down. And then he drops down to middleweight, looks pretty good in his first fight, then has a no contest where he gets poked in the eye and can't continue. And then his last fight, things were looking great against Daniel Kelly, and then he just stopped fighting, and Kelly just poured it on and picked up a huge victory for Australia. It just made no sense. That was a fight that he was a massive favorite in, and it was extremely disappointing. Now, against Leonardo Laleko, that is a bit of a concern because Laleko is actually the type of fighter that gets stronger as the fight goes on. There is no quit whatsoever in him. If you watched his UFC debut, Anthony Smith got the better of him over the first two rounds, but Laleko just kept coming and kept coming, and then he really poured it on in the third round, actually had Smith in a bit of trouble on multiple occasions, almost finished it, ended up losing a decision. So if Antonio Carlos Jr. doesn't get a strong lead in the first two rounds or potentially finish this fight in the first round, then I can see Laleko just withstanding it and then just pushing and then overtaking Carlos Jr. I mean, despite the fact that Carlos Jr. is a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, a little bit longer reach, like sometimes heart matters more than anything. And I think Laleko definitely has Carlos Jr. beat in the heart department. And he also throws a lot of strikes and he's more accurate. So I can see Carlos Jr. starting strong here, but literally the second he starts to slow down or the second something doesn't work, I can see Laleko turning the tides on him and then pouring it on late and either getting a finish or potentially stealing a decision. So, even though I do think Carlos Jr. is the better fighter, I think Laleko actually is going to pull this one out. So I'm trusting in Laleko, and I think, you know, heart sometimes does matter more than skill at times, and this could be one of those situations. So my pick is Leonardo Augusto Laleko. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Augusto Montano, who is 15-2, taking on Bilal Muhammad, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Well, the public is fading the Montano brothers, let me tell you that right now. It's I open the line, Muhammad, minus 300 to come back, or minus 305, I should say, to come back on Montano at plus 225. And right now, Muhammad is minus 360 to come back on Montano is plus 300. So yes, public is fading both brothers here. Both brothers are in tough matchups as well. And I understand it. I mean, we were just talking about Brown and now we're talking about Muhammad with this Montano. So man, I mean, Muhammad actually was a very promising prospect in his own right. I mean, his fight against Joban was a classic, instant classic, because he got worked over early on in that fight, but he had the heart, the stamina, the determination to come back and make it a close fight. I mean, by the end of it, it was competitive, and he gained some respect back, that's for sure. But the main issue I had in that fight was Muhammad is just so hittable, man. I mean, that's the problem with it. His defense definitely needs some work. He's got some speed, he's got some power, he's got some kind of footwork. He just not enough, though. I mean, he definitely needs to address that area in his game. He's got to move that head, maybe get a little bit better with that footwork and head movements, because defensively there is a concern always with Muhammad. And Montano, even though he's getting disrespected by the betters out there, man, the guy has power. I mean, the guy could definitely finish fights. He's got some power. He's got some good timing with his knees. I mean, the guy can knock you out with either hand. He's got some kicks he mixes in there. The problem with Montano is he just doesn't keep that foot on the gas. His cardio is a little bit suspect, and if he doesn't finish you early typically, then he's going to struggle throughout the fight and probably get outpointed. So if this fight hits the scorecards, there's no doubt in my mind that Muhammad's going to cruise to a decision, a pretty clear decision. If it doesn't, I think Muhammad can land enough often with his striking ability. I mean, I think Muhammad has really good striking as far as counterpunching ability goes. He's got good accuracy overall, and he's got enough pop in his punches that he can knock people out. But if that doesn't happen, obviously he can outpoint Montano. Now, Muhammad's wrestling is pretty decent as well. He's got good takedown defense. So Montano's, I think his advantage probably would be on the ground here as far as his submission game goes over Muhammad as well. He's just another case like his brother. He's not going to be able to get this fighter down. So Muhammad's going to be able to keep this fight upright, and he's going to be able to outpoint Montano, basically counterpunching and working his striking the way he does. So this is another stylistically, it's a tough matchup for Montano. I'd be surprised if he does come away with a win here, but again, as the price goes up a little bit, it went from 305, right now it's 360. I don't think there's much value left because of Muhammad's defense. That is the concern. So would you really lay 3-1 or over with a guy that's that hittable against a guy, even if you don't respect him, he does have enough power to turn off Muhammad's light. So that's where the cautious part is. I know Joban wasn't able to get rid of Muhammad, so a lot of people probably think Montano can't either, but every fight's different. Every circumstance is different. Even though Joban is a better fighter than Montano, doesn't mean Montano can't knock out Muhammad. So just be cautious out there with both fading both brothers, because stylistically, they should win, but at the same time where the price is right now, I don't really think there's value in including Muhammad here. So I am going to pick Muhammad to win. He probably wins fairly easy, especially if he hits the scorecards. I think he makes it clear enough that it's not going to be that controversial. But as far as the play goes, I would just stay away. So my pick is Muhammad.
Just like his brother, it's another long wait between fights for Augusto Montano. He hasn't fought since last year when he lost to Cathal Pendred, of all people. Now, in that fight, he did not look good. I mean, he was hesitant, he didn't push, and he actually allowed Cathal Pendred to outstrike him, which is pretty embarrassing, especially for a guy that was entering that fight at 15-1 overall. Now, Bilal Muhammad, he just lost his UFC debut not that long ago, so that is a bit of a concern with his quick turnaround, especially in a fight where he basically got dropped or rocked three separate times. So that always is something you have to think about when somebody gets hurt in fights and then they want a quick turnaround. Sometimes they're just not in the right mindset. They want to try to erase that loss and then they might end up doing even more damage to themselves. That being said, Muhammad is the better, more technical striker compared to Montano. Muhammad pushes a good pace. He has some solid overall striking ability. He mixes things up. He has good footwork. But his defense is, it definitely leaves a lot to be desired, as Nick mentioned. So, you know, even though Montano isn't as good of a striker as Muhammad, I think he packs a little bit more of a punch. So if he connects with something solid, you could see this fight get turned on its head in a hurry. Because that's what happened in the Joban fight. Muhammad, you know, tried to push the pace early, got clipped, and then he was kind of in survival mode over the next two rounds until Joban slowed down in the third round with an injury. So Muhammad, while he should have the edge here, he just has to protect his chin. That is priority number one. He needs to improve his defense. He needs to keep that chin in motion and not just kind of charge in straightforward and leave it exposed while throwing a left hook. So I expect Muhammad to win, but it is not a guarantee, especially with his defense. And while his recovery is good, the chin, not so much with how quickly he was and badly he was getting dropped. So Muhammad will definitely have to have improved striking defense if he wants to pull this out, because while Montano isn't as technical, he can definitely make up for that with some pure power. So that being said, I do think Muhammad can use movement and dance around Montano and find his openings and connect and either win a decision like he usually does, or maybe get a late stoppage if he can wear Montano down. He just has to worry about that one punch power. So my pick is going to be Belal Muhammad. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Gabriel Benitez, who is 18-6, taking on Sam Cecilia, who is 15-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Cecilia -190, the comeback on Benitez at +150. And right now it's Cecilia -165. Benitez is +145. So 5 cent drop on the dog. Line margins have tightened up. And there is two-way action coming on this fight as well. Interesting matchup, because both guys have ways to win this fight. I mean, it is going to be a competitive fight. I know Cecilia is one of these guys, again, Ultimate Fighter veteran. He's gotten a lot better since he's been out of the house as well. He's just kind of rounded out his game a little bit more, and he's fighting a little bit smarter as well. So Cecilia has power on the feet. He's capable of knocking opponents out at 145 pounds for sure. He's got wrestling to put people on the floor. He can control fights. He's getting a little bit smarter. His scrambling ability is getting a little bit better underground as well, getting out of trouble sometimes. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff you like about Sam for sure. I mean, he's definitely doing some – making some improvements and doing some things right. But Benitez, I think, is the better mixed martial artist overall. I think Benitez is better on the feet. I mean, power for power, of course, both these guys honestly can knock each other out. And Sam obviously has a little bit more pure power on the feet. But Benitez, I think, is the better striker. He's got a bit of pop in his punches as well, mixes in kicks pretty well, pretty often. And then on the ground, I think he's got a significant edge as far as pure submission ability goes as well. I mean, he's got a sick guillotine choke. I mean, Benitez has one of those guillotines that once he gets it wrapped up, I mean, you're probably not going to get out of it. So he's dangerous even when you're shooting in to take him down, because he gets that guillotine choke around your neck and it's a wrap oftentimes. But if not, if he gets, I guess, laid and prayed, which a lot of people are probably suspecting Cecilia does here, then obviously, yeah. I mean, if Sam stays out of submission problems, he controls this fight by taking it to the ground and winning a pretty competitive but clear-cut decision, I can understand it. I can see it. But man, I think Sam's going to probably eventually run into some problems here against Benitez. I think, again, even if he's taking Benitez down, I do think, by the way, Benitez keeps on improving his overall takedown defense. He's been working with the guys over at AKA, so he's getting better fight by fight, but he probably will still get put on his back against Sam here in this spot. And if he doesn't get the sub, then he's probably going to be in some problems if he can't get back up off the ground. So I do understand that Sam should be favorite for, I mean, basically that alone in itself. I mean, he's probably good enough to fend all that stuff off, and if he is, then he's going to be able to get the win here. But I still think Benitez can probably finish him. If it stays on the feet, even with that guillotine choke I said on the ground, or if he takes his back, rear naked choke, something like that, I just think Benitez is the better mixed martial artist, and he's probably going to find a way to win this fight before it hits the scorecard. So I do think Benitez finishes Sam Cecilia. It's not a popular opinion. I understand that. But at the same time, I just I think that that's what's going to happen here in this spot. I mean, he's a little bit younger than Sam, only a couple years difference. I think Benitez keeps on improving enough where I actually see more progress in his game than I do Cecilia. So I just got to lean with who I think is a better mixed martial artist in general, and it is Benitez.
And while I do think actually that Gabriel Benitez is the better overall fighter, my problem is I think Sam Cecilia still has plenty left in the tank here. I know Cecilia is a guy that's kind of known for just throwing heat on the feet and just trying to knock his opponent out with just wild, crazy punches. And if they connect, then he can win. But honestly, that's actually not how he's won a majority of his fights. If you go through and you watch some of his wins, several of them were where he took his opponents down. You look at the Aaron Phillips fight, the Godofredo Pepe fight. He was able to get top position in those fights. And then the Pepe fight, he landed some nasty punches in the top position and put him out. Now, Gabriel Benitez, he showcased some really solid overall striking ability. He looked excellent in his first couple UFC performances against Humberto Brown, Clay Collard. I was very impressed. But then with Andre Feely, you know, he got rocked. He got taken down. He got beat up on the ground and ended up being a round one TKO. So if Sam Cecilia can utilize some of that wrestling that really helped him in the first half of his UFC run, then I think that he can hold his own there and avoid submission trouble. Cause I mean, Pepe has a more dangerous guard than Benitez, and he was able to survive Pepe's guard and then land some nasty punches and put him out. So I can see Cecilia kind of repeating the Andre Feely, plan of attack here against Benitez. That being said though, Benitez is definitely dangerous. He showcased like just nasty striking against Clay Collard, just completely put a whooping on him. So Cecilia needs to be careful on the feet. Even though he has a ton of power, Cecilia's chin is not the best. Cecilia, obviously he's coming off of a knockout loss to Duho Choi, but even before then, he got, rocked and dropped on the feet by Cole Miller. He got taken out on the feet by Honey Jason. So I definitely do worry a little bit about how Cecilia is going to perform in the stand-up here against Benitez, because I can see Benitez just outpointing him and doing some damage on the feet, maybe even putting him away. But if Cecilia mixes in his wrestling, I think he's actually going to have a pretty good chance here. His, you know, Benitez has only defended one out of two takedown attempts so far in his UFC career. So if Cecilia is able to successfully get some takedowns, I think that that could definitely turn the tide for him. So I'm going to slightly lean Cecilia, although I'm definitely concerned if this turns into a slugfest on the feet. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have a featherweight contest between Chaz Skelly, who is 15-2, and Maximo Blanco, who is 12-7-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Skelly -170, the comeback on Blanco at +130. Right now it's Skelly -175, Blanco is +155. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming on this fight. There was early action on Skelly, then action back on Blanco here as well. A lot of split opinions on this fight. Man, you know what? In my opinion, Skelly's been disappointing. I mean, disappointing to the point where his skill set alone should carry him to just really be a better fighter. If he could get that cardio issue straightened out, that would be step one, I think, of Skelly's problems. His stamina is not what it should be. I mean, as the fight progresses, he definitely looks pretty bad. Even in the first round, sometimes he looks kind of pretty bad, like he's winded there. But Skelly's skill set is definitely pretty solid. I mean, and in MMA, it seems to work fairly well for him. I mean, the guy has a decent overall record. Of course, Skelly is coming off a loss to Elkins, which is respectable. I mean, Elkins is one of the best grinders, obviously, at 145 pounds. So it's not necessarily a bad loss. I mean, Elkins is the type of fighter that's really always in the mix as far as, you know, those that potentially could get a title shot or whatnot. I mean, he's right there. He's knocking on the door. So it's not a bad loss, but Skelly has kind of similar skill sets where he can grind people out. He has a good submission game. You know, once he gets to the ground, he's fairly smart in that aspect as well. I mean, look at the Souza fight. I mean, he was actually doing miserable in that fight early on, but he managed to get the fight to the ground and take his back and then win by submission there. So when he's in problem, when he's in trouble, he definitely knows what to look for and knows what his strengths are, and he tried to utilize them as best he can. So Skelly's not bad. I just wish that he kind of lived up to the expectations a little bit more, performed a little bit better and more consistent. I guess Blanco, if he doesn't get this fight to the ground, he's in some serious trouble. We all know that Blanco is known for his devastating knockout power. The guy has wrestling in most cases to be able to keep the fight upright. And once he does, he usually has success on the feet and outstriking his opponents. Now, of course, with Blanco as well, that wasn't necessarily the case last time. I mean, he was facing a debut fighter in Luke Sanders, and Luke Sanders was able to smash him a few times, land some big shots on Blanco, rock him, and then actually submit him. So if Skelly's able to do something like that, it wouldn't be shocking at this point, because Blanco has, I mean, he's only 32 years old, but in fight years, he's definitely beyond that. I mean, he's been in a lot of wars. His chin's getting tested quite often, so it wasn't even that surprised that Sanders got that. But if this stays if it turns into a slugfest, Blanco definitely should have the advantage over Skelly, and I think Blanco will start stuffing some takedowns, especially as the fight goes and progresses a little bit. I think Skelly's going to wear out to the point where Blanco is going to be a lot more dangerous as the fight progresses. So this is a tough one for me. I mean, I could realistically go either way in this fight. I could see Blanco winning this fight by knockout, by stoppage possibly. I could see Skelly possibly grinding out a close, gritty decision, or maybe taking Blanco's back and submitting him that way as well. So it is a toss-up. I guess I'll lean a little bit more towards Skelly to bounce back in this spot and maybe look a little bit better than he has. But I mean, again, not very confident here. If Skelly cannot get this fight to the ground and he cannot basically sub Blanco or control him enough to win the decision, I mean, he's in some serious trouble here. So gonna pick Skelly, but it's a spot that I would not lay the juice again. And it is another spot where it's a dog or pass situation.
This is definitely a tricky fight. I mean, if it takes place on the feet, Blanco is the quicker guy. He has some good power in his hands. He has good movement. That being said, he is a little bit smaller, and Chaz Skelly is definitely a terrific wrestler and might be able to utilize that to get Blanco down. Even though Blanco actually does come from a pretty solid wrestling background, having been, you know, one of the elite wrestlers out of Venezuela back in the day. But we really haven't seen a lot of wrestling out of Blanco lately. For the most part, he likes to just stand and bang, and if he can connect with something heavy, he can put his opponent out. The other thing with Blanco is you never quite know what you're going to get with him, because, you know, he's the type of fighter that, he'll knee an opponent while they're down, not thinking about it. He'll land a low blow, not thinking about it. He'll, you know, just make some really strange decisions in the cage that can usually negatively impact him. He can get points deducted easily. So that's always something you have to be worried about, because he might have one of the worst fight IQs of any fighter in the history of the UFC. And Chaz Skelly, on the other hand, while his conditioning has never been amazing, he kind of makes up for everything with just pure guts and heart. Like, as Nick mentioned, the Souza fight, Skelly was exhausted. He wasn't able to get takedowns. Like, he was losing that fight. He was getting beat up on the feet. And then just last-ditch effort, just gave everything he had to get a takedown, and then just basically squeezed with everything he had on a choke and ended up getting a stoppage victory. So, you know, that's just the type of fighter he is. And that's the type of fighter that I like. Even though I wish his conditioning was better, maybe it will be better this time around because we're fighting basically in his backyard. So I'm hoping that that helps him out. It'll all depend on how good his weight cut is, to be completely honest. I think the new weight cut system will help him a little bit, because he'll have a little bit of extra time to recover. And overall, I prefer a fighter with a ton of heart and ability to overcome than somebody that makes a lot of mental mistakes and is a bit vulnerable in some areas. So I think Chaz Skelly can get some takedowns. I think he can beat up Blanco on the ground, and I can see him either getting a submission or maybe even a TKO stoppage on the canvas. He just has to avoid extended stand-up exchanges with Blanco, because I do think he loses those. So my pick is going to be Chaz Skelly. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Chris Wade, who is 11-2, taking on Islam Makhachev, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, What's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Makhachev, minus 155, the comeback on Wade, plus 115. And right now looking over 5dimes.eu, it is Makhachev minus 120. Wade is even money. So 15-cent drop on the dog. Line margin has tightened up a little bit as well. Public betting Wade in this spot. Both these guys are good. So, I mean, it's definitely going to be a competitive fight. It's definitely a fight where you got two young up-and-coming fighters in the lightweight division that are really going to test themselves, and a win over either guy, you know, for the winner is definitely going to take a positive step forward in the right direction, because it's going to be a pretty solid, significant win. I mean, both these guys have the skill set to make life miserable for their opponents. Both these guys like to take the fight to the floor, control the grappling aspects of things, look for the submission. I mean, that's what they can do, but they don't have to do that. I mean, if the fight stays upright, both these guys have enough stand-up where they can do some damage on the feet. They mix things up well enough on the feet as well. So they can survive on the feet as well. So they're basically both complete fighters that have skill on the feet, but excel a little bit more on the ground for sure. And they like to grind people out. So they're both very similar fighters. I mean, this is a pick 'em type of fight, a true pick 'em type of fight for a reason here, but I still think we got to give a little bit of the edge, honestly, to Makhachev in this spot. I think he does have the more versed striking attack overall. I like his hands a little bit better than I do Wade's. I know he got floored and he got laid out by Martins, but I just think that's honestly, I mean, it wasn't good defense, obviously, for Makhachev, but that's a case where Martins is severely underrated and he's got crazy knockout power. So he could do that to a lot of lightweights. So Makhachev just got caught. Again, you could credit that defense for his loss there more than anything else. So it is his fault. But at the same time, I'm saying that Martins has enough knockout power that I'm going to kind of give him a pass in that spot, because Wade does not have Martin's type of knockout power. So even though Wade, again, his striking is not bad, I think he could definitely do some damage. He mixes in kicks well, everything. I mean, he'll definitely be trying to outstrike Makhachev here along the way, but he's not going to pose quite a threat like I said, like a guy like Martins did there. So this is his bounce back fight for Makhachev. I think that he is going to rebound well enough. Obviously, he's going to know to tighten up that defense. I'm guarantee they've been working on it. Now, will we see some significant improvements? Probably not in this short time, but that being said, against Wade, it probably will be enough to get him by here. I mean, it's interesting because Wade in his last fight, he fought Khabibov and he basically got controlled on the ground. That's what cost him the fight. Makhachev has the capabilities, maybe not Khabibov type of wrestling. I mean, we're not going to know until they get in there and see how really well they match up and how the wrestling does take place here. So it is going to be interesting, but Wade has been, even though he's known for his wrestling, he's known for his grappling game, he has been controlled by better grapplers, better wrestlers. So Makhachev could have some success on the ground against Wade. And I think if it stays standing, Makhachev's actually going to have a little bit of edge on the feet as well. So I do lean towards Makhachev in this spot. I think he should be a slight favorite over Wade. I just think he's just a little bit better in all areas across the board. I think submission savvy, I mean, both of them have it. I mean, I do like Wade's submission game probably a little bit better than Makhachev's, but overall that should kind of neutralize each other out a little bit here. And I think that Makhachev just basically outpoints Wade to a competitive decision and a respectable decision either way. But I do think Makhachev gets the job done here. So I'm going to lean Makhachev.
Yeah, these fighters are almost, to copy Mike Goldberg, virtually identical. You have exact same height, exact same reach, exact same leg reach, and they're in the same weight class. The only difference is their records. Makhachev's won one more and Chris Wade's lost one more. And the fact that Chris Wade, the way he lost his last fight, is very, very important, because that's the type of fighter that Makhachev is capable of being. When Wade lost to Rustam Khabibov, he got taken down, he got controlled, and, you know, for being an excellent wrestler with pretty good submission ability, that is very important, because that means that he couldn't really handle this Russian combat sambo grappling. And that's exactly what Makhachev brings. I mean, he is a friend and training partner of Nurmagomedov, Khabib, and he definitely is, you know, when he entered the UFC, he entered with a huge wave of hype. Now, he didn't quite live up to it. I mean, I thought that he would do a lot better in his UFC debut against Leo Kuntz, even though he did get a round two submission and only took 7 strikes total. His problem was his second fight, where he came out there against Adriano Martins and basically just started throwing crazy spinning attacks at him and hardly landed anything, and then got absolutely blasted by a huge right hand from Martins once Martins kind of got the timing of those spins down. And That was that. Now, the good news is Chris Wade is not Adriano Martins. Chris Wade, while he's not a bad striker, he doesn't really have any power. So there's really not anything that Wade needs to be, or that Makachev really needs to be worried about on the feet. I actually think Makachev, even though he was a little wild and reckless the last time, he probably gets the better of Wade on the feet here. And then when it does go to the ground, and I'm certain it will at some point, Makachev should win those scrambles as well, because he is an extremely talented grappler. As long as he spent some time on the grappling and didn't just focus on stand up and striking defense for this training camp, then he should be in really good shape. Makachev is still a really talented fighter. I think that if he fights up to his potential, this should not be a very difficult fight for him because of the stylistic matchup. So I have to side with Islam Makachev here. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Rowan Carnero, who is 20-10, taking on Kenny Robertson, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Robertson -130 to come back on Carnero at -110. Right now, line actually got flipped. I mean, well, it did get flipped for a second. It kind of flipped exactly back to a pick'em. It's -110 either way, but Carnero was around -115 earlier today. So this is the type of line. Open near pick'em, flipping back and forth, it'll probably stay near pick'em. It is a tough fight. I mean, both these guys are obviously skilled fighters. Carnero's been around the sport for a long time. I mean, he's 38 years old. He fought, I mean, his competition level was just ridiculous. I mean, he's fought a lot of big name opponents, had success against a lot of them as well. I mean, this is his second stint in the UFC and a deserving stint. I mean, the guy is definitely prove that he belongs to compete with some of the best. He's dropping back down to welterweight right now. He actually made his reappearance in the UFC at 185 pounds with the stunner over Munoz. So that was kind of a head scratcher. A lot of us were surprised how good he looked there. But overall, Carnero, I mean, the last couple years, even outside the UFC, the guy has definitely shown that, I mean, he's got the ability to compete and hang. So back at welterweight here, it's definitely going to be interesting. But I think Father Time is definitely a strike against him. I mean, he's 38 years old with all the fight years that he's had. He's beyond that in MMA years for sure. So it's interesting. And he's coming off of a devastating knockout loss at 185 to Brunson. So dropping back down to 170, this is against Robertson. It's obviously not as big of a challenge as he had in his last fight against Brunson. But still, Robertson definitely presents some problems for a guy like Carnero as well. So Carnero, I guess I'll finish off with him real quick first. I mean, he has a well-rounded skill set. He's primarily known for his ground skill. He's got good wrestling. He's got good submissions off his back or from on top position as well. So the guy definitely can end the fight on the ground. But his submission defense at times is a little bit concerning, and you shouldn't say that for the quality of BJJ he really has. So that's something to kind of watch out for. I mean, Robertson actually has a pretty slick submission game as well. So he shouldn't be able to sub Carnero, but you know what, man? I wouldn't be shocked if something crazy happens on the ground and Robertson does get the sub. But obviously that should kind of neutralize each other out here in most cases, because Carnero's ground game is pretty legit. So I don't think he gets subbed here, but again, it wouldn't shock me. But overall on the feet, if this fight stays up, Carnero probably is the more averse striker, the more technical striker of the two. I think Robertson, though, can be the more effective striker. Robertson has a little bit more pure power. The way he's a little bit more unorthodox and wild sometimes can actually work to his benefit in a spot like this. And especially with Carnero's chin getting tested and coming off of a knockout loss, then aggression on the feet from Robertson's probably not going to be a bad thing in this spot. And then on the ground, even though Carnero, I think early on, will probably be maybe the better fighter overall. Maybe he gets top position on Robertson, which is going to be hard. I mean, Robertson has decent takedown defense overall, but I think Carnero might end up on top early on. But as the fight progresses, I think Robertson's probably going to spend more time in top control. And if that's the case, I think Robertson will probably, if he doesn't finish Carnero, he'll probably edge out the scorecards in a very competitive battle. If it's not the case, then again, I mean, Carnero has a shot to pull this victory off. That's why it's exactly sitting around a pick'em. So it could realistically go either way, but I honestly lean a little bit more towards Robertson. I know he's been out since his split decision loss to Ben Saunders, and that was all the way back in July of 2015, with an injury, but he's had enough time off, and we just have to, I guess, be cautious a little bit in this fight to see how he actually performs, you know, from that injury and from the time off or whatnot here. And again, there's just a lot of question marks around this fight either way. Carnero dropping back down to 170, Robertson with the layoff and all that. So, but you take all that stuff away. If I'm just picking this fight to see right now at this time who the better fighter is, I honestly have to lean a little bit more towards Robertson. I think Robertson's a tough out for most people at welterweight. And at this point of his career, I think it's going to be a little bit too much for Kern Arrow to handle. So I'm picking Robertson to win this fight.
Yeah, this fight should be pretty competitive. I mean, Carnero's dropping down to welterweight, which he should have been all along after he beat Munoz in his UFC debut. And Derek Brunson definitely gave him a good incentive to drop down to welterweight and out of middleweight with that beating he put on him. And Kenny Robertson is a stiff test for him here because both guys are excellent on the ground. And if this fight goes to the ground, it should be really entertaining for however long it lasts because Robertson can get very creative on the canvas. I mean, that impressive leg attack that he pulled off in his UFC return was extremely, extremely impressive. While Carnero, I mean, he just steamrolled Mark Munoz on the ground to pick up that win. And that actually jumped him into the top 15 at middleweight, which he probably didn't deserve at the time. But anyway, now that he's dropping down to welterweight, I think you're going to see more of what he's capable of. My only issue is Carnero is 38 years old. And Robertson, you know, he's no spring chicken either. He's 32 and he's coming off of an ACL reconstruction. So he hasn't fought in about a year. And he's basically spent most of that time just rehabbing a knee injury while Carnero has been, you know, just working to drop down to welterweight again. So I think on the feet, Robertson probably has a little bit more power, but Carnero, I think, is slightly more technical with the striking, although, you know, he's not very dangerous. And then on the ground, Robertson, I think, might be a little more original and crafty with his submissions, while Carnero is more of a brute force submission guy, like just get you to the floor, pass your guard, get to a dominant position, look for a submission. I think Robertson could be more dangerous from different positions, maybe kind of force some unique scrambles here. And this fight could definitely get very interesting in a hurry. That being said, the thing that concerns me the most is the fact that Robertson is coming off of a knee injury here. So I'm going to side with Rowan Carnero. I'm not insanely confident about it because he is dropping down to welterweight for the first time in a while. But I think, you know, him dropping down a weight class is a little more forgiving than coming off of a devastating knee injury like Robertson. So I'm going to side with Carnero, but I'm not really confident either way. Now moving down to the lightweight division, we have Evan Dunham, who is 16-6, taking on Rick Glenn, who is 18-3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Dunham, -280, the comeback on Glenn at +200. And right now, looking over five dimes, Dunham is -280. The comeback on Glenn is +240. So a spot that hasn't went too crazy. It's staying virtually the same here. Two-way action coming in. A lot of people are parlaying Dunham as well. I expect it. I mean, what you're seeing here is Rick Glenn coming into this fight, making his UFC debut out of his weight class. I mean, he usually fights at 145 pounds, and he's a good featherweight fighter outside of the UFC. He should have been in the UFC already, to be honest with you, competing in the featherweights amongst the best of them, because Glenn has a skill set that, I mean, for 145 pounds especially, he's long for the weight class. He's got skill on the feet. He's a finisher on the ground as well. He's tough as nails. He's got good stamina. I mean, there's a lot of things to like about Rick Glenn, that's for sure. So he's not going to be an easy fight, even at 155 for Dunham. But the problem is Dunham has been underrated throughout his whole career, man. I mean, Dunham has fought the best of the best at 155 pounds. It's unfortunate for him. I mean, he was making a title run way back when, and it kind of, once he got to that realm where he was about to knocking on that door, you know, he was getting beat. So at times that would happen to him. So he didn't quite make it, but overall, I mean, he was right up there. He, in my opinion, is one of the best and toughest outs, like a great gatekeeper is what I'm trying to spit out, I guess, for the lightweight division. If you could beat Dunham, you're definitely considered a threat for the title one day, I think. I mean, that's how good he is, because Dunham, outstanding grappling. His stand-up game is a little bit underrated as well, I think. Just all around, he's just a tough mixed martial artist. But there is some concerns with Dunham's chin, of course. I mean, he's susceptible to the body at times as well on the striking aspect of things. So he's a beatable fighter, but he's a tough out for most people, and especially if you're making your UFC debut out of your weight class. So Glenn is going to get controlled here by Dunham. I think Dunham's pace is just going to be a little bit too much for Glenn. Glenn's going to have to probably get the finish to get the job done here. And it's not out of the question. I mean, I do give Glenn a small chance of getting that done. I mean, he's good enough that he could possibly finish Dunham, but I think realistically that doesn't happen. Dunham probably grinds him out like he has most opponents in the UFC thus far. And man, I tell you what, for most of us kind of counting Dunham out a long time ago and not really talking about him, not really mentioning him, this little run that he's been on recently is pretty impressive. And I'm glad to see it because Dunham is just a great guy. He loves fighting. I mean, he's been in the game for so long that he just kind of flies under the radar and does what he does. And at this point, mentally, I think it's at the best he's ever been because he's not putting that kind of pressure on himself. I mean, he's just kind of taking it fight by fight and really just going out there and doing what he does. So you got to love that in a guy like Dunham. So I do think there's some promise in Glenn, especially after this fight. He's probably going to lose this fight, and then he drops down to his normal weight class at 145 pounds. You got to watch out for him because he's going to pick off a lot of people. If matched right, Glenn can make a run at 145 pounds. But in this case here, he's not going to be Dunham. I don't think he will. So if he doesn't get the finish, he's not going to win. I do believe that Dunham survives and probably gets a nod here.
Yeah, Rick Glenn is definitely a talented fighter. I mean, he was the World Series of Fighting featherweight champion for a reason, and he definitely has some talent. He has a little bit of pop in his hands. He has good striking technique. His ground game is a bit underrated. He has relatively good takedowns, good ground and pound, and it's pretty good submission game. But as Nick mentioned, while he does have the length to fight at lightweight, he is frame-wise a featherweight, and he's only fighting at lightweight, in my opinion, because it's a short-notice UFC debut opportunity. So win or lose in this fight, he is almost 100% dropping down to the featherweight division. Now, Evan Dunham, you know, maybe Glenn could be catching him at the right time. You know, at one point we thought Evan Dunham was, you know, completely tailspinning and was on the decline in his career, and that was on his three-fight losing streak. But if you go back and look at that three-fight losing streak, he lost to Rafael Dos Anjos, Donald Cerrone, and Edson Barboza, three of the best fighters in the lightweight division. And the Dos Anjos fight was insanely close. So I think now, most recently, what we've seen is the best of Evan Dunham with his wins over Ross Pearson, with his wins over Joe Lauzon, where he showcased excellent striking on the feet and several ability to get takedowns against people that maybe wanted to keep the fight standing. So I think Evan Dunham at this point is actually fighting about as good as he can fight in his career, despite the fact that now he is, you know, 34 years old. Dunham has above average wrestling, an excellent ground game, very unorthodox submission attacks if he wants to utilize them. And he mixes things up on the feet pretty well. He doesn't have a lot of power, but he makes up for that with pace and technique. So I do definitely think Evan Dunham is capable of beating several really talented fighters in the lightweight division. Maybe not the elite of the elite, but he definitely is a guy that is a solid gatekeeper for about the top 10 in the lightweight division. And to be honest, I don't think Rick Glenn would be a top 10 lightweight. He definitely has a lot of potential, training out of Rufus Sport. It's a good gym. And he's definitely had some excellent performances throughout his career, especially on his run through the World Series of Fighting to earn his opportunities at the title. But again, Rick Glenn is just a little too small in terms of strength and frame. I don't think that he's going to be able to handle the strength and power of Evan Dunham on the canvas. I think he can get bullied a little bit here. And I expect Evan Dunham to probably win by decision because Glenn is pretty tough. I think it'll be difficult to take him out here. So my pick is going to be Evan Dunham, and then I expect Rick Glenn to drop to featherweight next. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the middleweight division, we have Uriah Hall, who is 13-6, taking on Derek Brunson, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Brunson, minus 215, the comeback on Hall at plus 165. Right now it is Brunson minus 185. The comeback on Hall is at plus 160. So 5 cent drop on the dog. Two-way action is coming in on this fight as well. Tough, man. I mean, you got your wrestler versus your striker. I mean, I know it's a bit more than that because both these guys have more skill than that, but I mean, that's basically what it is on paper. And that's kind of how it should play out here because even though Brunson has been really improving his striking, he's got confidence on the feet now, which you like to see. He's capable, obviously, of knocking people out. I mean, you wouldn't expect it for a grappler, but that's how much improvement, that's how much focus and training he's getting done. I mean, he's beat Carnero, which we were just talking about, by knockout. Before that, it was Sam Alvey. Alvey's a pretty good win. I mean, let's face it, he's not an easy guy to knock out there, and Brunson got rid of him as well. So he's coming off a couple of knockouts in a row. I think actually before that, he even knocked out Herman. So that's not bad. I mean, he's on a definite run of knockouts here against quality competition, but make no mistake, Brunson is not really a striker. He is a grinder and one of the better wrestlers that you're going to see at 185 pounds. I mean, to the point where in his fight with Romero, he actually got top position on Yoel Romero. I mean, that's not easy to do at all. So that's the kind of level of wrestling Brunson has overall. And against Hall, he's the type of fighter that wants to keep things upright. I mean, he's a devastating striker. You can ask Musasi firsthand of how devastating he is. He was losing that fight, as we all know. In the first round, he got controlled and out-wrestled. That's a key word here, against Musasi in the first round. And then, man, that in the second round was able to land that vicious jump-spinning back kick and then finish Musasi off. That was a huge win for him, a huge feather in his cap. So Hall is an outstanding striker. When he's on, man, I mean, he's a tough guy to beat. But the problem with Hall throughout his career, in my opinion, is he's been put on his back too much. I mean, if you look at his takedown defense percentage, it's 71%. I don't even understand how it's 71%, honestly, overall. I think it's good, but it's not that good. I mean, if you look at it, it's not like he's going to be able to, I don't think, fend off Brunson's takedowns. Hall has been taken out several times throughout his career and controlled on the ground a little bit by lesser wrestlers than Brunson. So I think in this spot here, what we're going to see is Hall's going to try to sprawl brawl. And if he's able to do that, he's going to probably knock Brunson out, I think, because Brunson has been knocked out a couple times in his career, and Hall definitely has enough power on the feet where if they exchange, I would definitely favor Hall in that scenario for sure. But if he doesn't keep it upright, Brunson's going to beat him on the floor. I mean, he's going to outgrind him. If he doesn't submit him or get top position and ground upon him out, then he's just going to control enough of the tempo to possibly get the decision win here. As far as cardio goes, though, that has been an issue off and on for Brunson. I know he's addressed it, and he seems like he's getting a little bit better in that area, but overall, I think Hall does have the cardio edge in this spot. He's going to have a little bit of pure reach over Brunson in this spot as well, and again, he's going to have the striking edge. So that's why I go back to the beginning and say this is your wrestler versus striker matchup. If Brunson decides to not go for takedowns and test out his knockout skill, I think he's probably going to be the one getting knocked out. So that's not a smart move for him. I think he is going to try to wrestle in this fight, and that's how he wins this fight. So my official pick is Brunson by just basically doing what he does best. I mean, the guy has looked good. He's been performing against high caliber competition well, and I think that continues here against Hall. He has to be cautious. He has to be careful, but he can win this fight, and I think he is going to win this fight.
Yeah, this is a very interesting fight. I mean, Uriah Hall from distance is one of the most dangerous fighters in the UFC, whether alone the middleweight division. And Derek Brunson, he is the type of fighter that likes to crowd his opponents, get right in their grill, and just start throwing bombs. And you saw that in his recent wins against Rowan Carnero. You saw it in his win over Sam Alvey. You saw it in his fight against Ed Herman. Like, the guy is just capable of completely steamrolling people. And he can also play the game. Like, when he faced somebody that, in my opinion, has a bit of a similar skill set to Uriah Hall in Lorenz Larkin, when Larkin was at middleweight, what did Brunson do that time? He repeatedly took him down and then started beating him up on the ground. He got, how many takedowns was it? 4 takedowns against Lorenz Larkin. And went for submissions, went for guard passes, and just worked him over on the canvas. So if he's smart here, Brunson will crowd Hall early and then just get a body lock or maybe drop down for a single leg and just drag him to the ground. The main thing you have to worry about is Hall catching him coming in, because with Hall, timing is everything. You saw that in the Musasi fight. Musasi came in with a very similar game plan as what I expect Derek Brunson to have, with taking Uriah Hall down and then just trying to work him over on the ground and maybe try to get a submission. And it worked perfectly in the first round. And then when Musasi changed levels to early in the second round, Hall clipped him with that spinning back kick and then put him out. It was one of the more crazy finishes I've ever seen in terms of something you didn't expect. So Brunson does not have as good of a chin as Musasi. So if he gets clipped with anything even close to that, I think he could get in serious trouble. I mean, you got to remember, while Brunson has looked really good lately, he still has been knocked out a couple times in his career. I mean, Jacare Souza absolutely blistered him in Strikeforce, like in only a couple seconds. And then He was winning the fight against Yoel Romero, but expended a lot of energy, and Romero turned it on late in the third round and put him out. So, granted, those are losses to two of the best fighters in the middleweight division, basically like numbers 2 and 3 overall. But he still is definitely capable of being knocked out. So if Uriah Hall connects with anything really solid, Brunson could be on clear street. So he just has to be really careful with his entrances, with his level changes when he does look for that takedown, because I'm almost certain he's going to. Because while Robert Whittaker did have a lot of success just pressuring Hall and staying in his face, I don't think that Brunson has the technical striking ability that Whittaker has. He's more just all power. And if he doesn't put away Hall with just a blitz early, then he could slow down and Hall would, I think, put him away at some point. So I really do expect Derek Brunson to put early pressure on Hall and then try to get takedowns and just maybe try to finish this fight on the ground or just ride it out to a decision. So that's how I think Derek Brunson wins, and I expect him to pull it off. So my pick is going to be Derek Brunson. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the lightweight division, we have Dustin Poirier, who is 20-4, taking on Michael Johnson, who is 17-10. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Poirier -175, the comeback on Johnson at +135. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's -155 for Poirier. The comeback is still that +135 for Johnson. So line did creep up a little bit. There was early action coming in on Poirier, late action or later action coming in a little bit more towards Johnson as well. So there is two-way action on this fight, and there will continue to be two-way action on this fight for sure at the sportsbooks because, man, both these guys are definitely skilled fighters, and it's a great main event, to be honest with you. I mean, you know that it's going to be a war. You know it's going to be a fun fight while it lasts. I mean, both these guys have the capability to finish each other on the feet. Poirier has an outstanding ground game to go along with it. Johnson has outstanding wrestling. So this is an interesting battle. This is a scrap. This, in my opinion, it's a true almost coin flip type of fight. Poirier was having a lot of success at 145 pounds as a featherweight. He decided to move up to lightweight after not going so well. I mean, obviously getting knocked out or whatnot. I mean, it just, he said, hey, look, let me stop cutting all this weight. Let me test my waters or test the waters at lightweight and see what I can do there. And he's looked phenomenal. I mean, to the point where, man, I mean, his performances has won a lot of people over deservingly. Look what he did to Bobby Green in the last fight. Bobby Green's a pretty tough guy, and Poirier just ran through him. His win over Duffy, I think, was gritty. It was tough. It was impressive. Duffy, Joe Duffy is a talented fighter, not an easy out at all. Poirier weathered the storm. I mean, he got hit a few times in that spot. His chin held up okay. He showed the toughness and the smarts to get the fight to the ground and do what he had to do to win a fairly competitive decision there as well. So at 155, it does seem to be the better division. I mean, he's not, again, suffering the knockout loss like he did to McGregor in that spot there, or he's not getting rocked like he did even against Corsani. I mean, let's not forget, Poirier has that type of chin that he's been rocked in several fights throughout his career. And I mean, it's a little bit scary. You can't trust it. But at 155, again, it seems to be the right division for him. He's no joke at all. I mean, he, as far as skill set goes, the guy has really good striking, aggressive striking, power on the feet. His submission game on the ground is underrated. I mean, he's got sneaky good submissions. And then, of course, his wrestling game's outstanding as well. So he's got a total package. And Johnson, on the other hand, obviously his submission game is really not there. It's not up to par at all. It's more of his wrestling base that gets him by. I mean, as far as sprawling and brawling. His ability on the feet, though, is fantastic. He's got speed. He's got power. He's got accuracy. He's the type of fighter that, in a lot of cases, will get the job done. I mean, if somebody has a suspect chin, you don't want to get in there with Michael Johnson at all. I mean, he can put you away. So I think as a dog, the guy even, I mean, from a betting perspective, the guy thrives a little bit more. If you look at it, I mean, when he's favored at times is when he hasn't been doing so great, but he's pulled off some upset wins along the way in his career. Against Barboza, he was a dog. He came through there. Against Tibau, he was a dog. He came through there. Against Lozon, he was a dog. He came through there. And they were all competitive fights, all competitive lines. And it just seems like as a dog, I think you could trust Johnson almost a little bit more than as him being favored. And so it's tough to bet against a guy like Michael Johnson. He proves people wrong time and time again. So to me, this is going to be a test for both fighters. I could see Poirier having success, maybe knocking Johnson out or rocking him and getting a sub. But realistically, I think what's going to happen here is I think Johnson's going to sprawl, brawl, be able to keep this fight upright. He's going to have the speed advantage here. He's going to have the accuracy. And I think he's going to end up catching Poirier on that chin and putting him out in his first knockout loss at lightweight as well. So I'm going to lean with the dog here. I think that Johnson's just a dangerous matchup for Poirier, and this is another real test. And if Poirier passes this test, then I could definitely gain even more respect. I mean, the guy's definitely winning me over. He doesn't need to because we know that he's a legit fighter and he's been for a long time. But still, man, I mean, this run that he's on is definitely impressive. He's fun to watch fight. So if he gets the job done against Johnson, I'll be more than impressed. But I do have to side with Johnson in this fight. I think Michael Johnson's just going to be a little bit too much for Dustin Poirier.
And this fight should be pretty competitive. I mean, Michael Johnson is a terrific striker. We've seen him get out there and beat some very, very top guys in the lightweight division in terms of Tony Ferguson, Edson Barboza, guys that are, especially Barboza, that are renowned for their striking prowess. And he just got in their face and just did not give them a lot of space to utilize any of their other weapons. Now, Dustin Poirier has been absolutely phenomenal since moving up to the lightweight division. His chin has looked better. He's been able to withstand some power shots from some tough guys like Joe Duffy. And then his striking power has been unbelievable. I mean, just absolutely destroyed guys like Cesar Ferreira, Yancy Medeiros, and then most recently just obliterated Bobby Green. So, and he took all three of those guys out in the first round. The Joe Duffy fight was a little tougher, but that is important too, because we showcased that he can handle a decision, that he has a lot of heart, and that he doesn't just have to rely on power and technique on the feet, because in that fight he used a lot of takedowns to win that one. And that's something he might need to use here against Michael Johnson, because Johnson's quick. He has some good pop in his hands. He has excellent striking technique. But for the most part, he likes to just stand and box. So if Poirier just gets into a boxing match here, then it's anybody's game. But if Poirier mixes it up and makes it not just a boxing match, but throws in some wrestling there, then that's definitely an area where he should have an advantage. Even though Johnson originally did come from a bit of a wrestling background, that's not something he really looks to implement anymore in his game. So I think that that's kind of started to fall by the wayside a little bit as he's focused on his stand-up. Now, we have seen Johnson get controlled in fights and submitted in fights in the past. Now, that hasn't happened super recently, but as far back as, you know, a couple years ago where he lost to Miles Jury, he lost to Hayza Madadi. Even on the Ultimate Fighter finale, he lost to Jonathan Brookins back in the day. All fights that he was winning on the feet but just could not handle on the ground. And that's something where Poirier should definitely be looking to implement. I think this fight is competitive on the feet, but I don't see a blowout either way. I think that they should both. It could just be whoever lands the first big shot. So that makes it a lot more up in the air. But if Poirier mixes in the wrestling, if he gets top position on Johnson, then his odds of winning improve dramatically. And I think that he is smart enough to do that, because you saw in his fight against Joe Duffy where, you know, maybe Duffy was good enough on the feet to make it really competitive and just whatever one punch could turn the tides. So Poirier dropped and changed levels and took him down. Now, Johnson doesn't have the best chin in the world either. You got to remember, you know, you go back, Danny Castillo was so close to finishing him in their fight. So he has been rocked in fights. He's definitely been hurt in fights, just like Poirier has. So, you know, whoever does land that first shot could definitely be the one that wins this one. But if Poirier mixes things up, I do think that he has the better chance to win. And he's not really given up any size or reach, hardly at all, 1 inch, despite him moving up a weight class, because for the most part, he was one of the biggest featherweights in the world. And now he's still a relatively good-sized lightweight. So I think that he'll be just fine here. And I think as long as Poirier mixes it up, I think he can definitely win this fight. So Poirier is my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 94. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.